Coming up, Father Tom Reese on the President and the Pope. And Saul Gonzalez looks at pastors who have two full-time jobs, one in church, the other in the world. How do they manage both? Also, a report from Bill Baker on Franciscans in the Holy Land. For seven centuries, looking after the most sacred sites of Christianity. Plus, the Blind Boys of Alabama singing gospel music for 70 years.
You just thank the Lord.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. President Obama visited Pope Francis at the Vatican this week in what was their first meeting. They exchanged greetings and gifts before moving into a private conversation that lasted 52 minutes. The discussion was said to be cordial and focused mainly on the poor and marginalized and challenges to peace around the world. We'll have an analysis of their meeting later in the program. The Supreme Court heard arguments this week in a pair of challenges to the contraception mandate in the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. One of the challengers is Hobby Lobby, a chain of craft stores owned by a Christian family. They say the requirement to provide certain kinds of contraception coverage in their employees' insurance plans violates their religious beliefs. The cases have deeply divided religious communities, and both sides were out in full force at the court. Last year, the Obama administration granted a religious exemption from the contraception mandate to churches and other religious organizations. Now the justices must decide whether for-profit businesses can receive exemptions. The court is expected to issue its decision in late June. The Christian relief group World Vision has reversed its controversial decision to hire employees who are in same-sex marriages. Earlier this week, World Vision had announced it was changing its employment policy to allow Christians in same-sex marriages to work there. The announcement set off a furor among the group's evangelical supporters, and a number of donors pledged to pull their sponsorships. After 2 days of withering criticism, World Vision's board reversed its original decision and issued an apology. In Egypt, there were protests of mass trials for those accused of being Islamist supporters of ousted President Mohamed Morsi. Earlier this week, 529 defendants were sentenced to death for their alleged involvement in attacking a police station and killing a police officer. Human rights groups have been raising concerns about the fairness of the trials, while Egyptian authorities push to prosecute the Muslim Brotherhood and other supporters of Morsi. About 16,000 people have been arrested in the crackdowns since Morsi was removed from office last July. A Catholic bishop in Germany accused of lavish spending has been officially relieved of his duties. This week, Pope Francis accepted the resignation of the Bishop of Limburg, Franz Peter Tabars van Elst, known to some as Bishop Bling Bling. He got in trouble after he was reported to have spent about $43 million renovating his residence and other buildings, a sum that included a $20,000 bathtub, $480,000 walk-in closets, and $1 million garden. Meanwhile, a high-profile delegation, including the governor of Pennsylvania and Philadelphia Archbishop Charles Chaput, was at the Vatican this week to invite Pope Francis to visit the U.S. next year. They asked the Pope to come to the World Meeting of the Family in Philadelphia in September 2015. During President Obama's meeting with the Pope, he also invited Francis to visit the U.S. We want to explore their meeting with Father Tom Rees, an authority on the Vatican and senior analyst for National Catholic Reporter. Tom, welcome. Welcome back here. Sum up the meeting between the President and the Pope, would you?
Sure. The principal focus of the meeting was talking about issues of peace, international issues, and also talking about how to help poor people, how to help the marginalized all over the world. This is an area where the Pope and President Obama are on the same page. At the same time, the Vatican always likes to support the local bishops when they're in conflict with their governments. And so the issues that the bishops of the United States are concerned of were also brought up.
Yeah. And this question of the U.S. bishops and the relationship with the U.S. president, that there's very great difference there, isn't there, especially on matters of contraception, things like that?
There are, but that wasn't the principal focus of the meeting. In fact, it doesn't seem that the Pope and the President talked about that at all. It was really talked about by the Secretary of State mm-hmm. for the Vatican.
Right after the conversation between the Pope and the President, Obama had a news conference, and he said in there something I thought was remarkable. He used some language that we don't often hear, and I want to play a little bit of that and get your comment on it.
I think what the theme that stitched our conversation together was a belief that in politics and in life, the quality of empathy, the ability to stand in somebody else's shoes and to care for someone even if they don't look like you or talk like you or share your philosophy, that's critical.
That's language we don't hear all the time from politicians, right?
Absolutely not. I think it shows the impact that Pope Francis had on the president. That language that the president uses is very much like the language that the Pope uses in his apostolic exhortation, Evangelii Gaudium, the joy of the gospel, where he talks about our need to look at one another as brothers and sisters, not the members of tribes or nations or political parties or religions, but to treat all of God's children as our brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm. When the Pope speaks about taking care of the poor in the world, what are the implications for capitalism?
Well, he has been very critical of the capitalistic system. It's not that he has some grand economic plan. He acts like an Old Testament prophet and comes in and says, this is wrong. The poor are still with us. They're suffering. The system is not working for them. Do something about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what he's telling politicians and business people.
And back to the meeting between the President and the Pope. So what? What's accomplished?
Well, I think there's short-term and long-term consequences. The Pope is going to the Middle East, and he wants to be a voice to help for reconciliation, to help the peace process, and that's extremely important. He also wants to change attitudes of people all over the world so that we treat one another as brothers and sisters, and then we can live in harmony and take care of our poorer brothers and sisters.
Tom Rees of National Catholic Reporter, many thanks to you.
Good being with you.
We have a special report now on ministers who are working two jobs, one in church, the other in the secular world, in order to support their families. Saul Gonzalez reports from Tennessee.
On Sundays, you'll find Pastor Sam Livingston at his Baptist church in Hohenwald, Tennessee. He gives the sermon.
That I hope that every time somebody gets to see me, they see Christ living through me.
Helps to teach the morning religion class and meets and greets members of his congregation.
How are you, Lee? How are you feeling?
It's all very typical work for a minister, but on the weekdays, you'll find Pastor Livingston at his other, very different job, as head of public utilities for his rural county. This morning, the job involves supervising a crew repairing a broken sewer line.
It's not church work.
No, sir. No, sir. It's completely different. Church smells a whole lot better than this does.
With one job in the secular world and the other in the religious, Sam Livingston is what's known as a bivocational pastor.
The term bivocational means that the pastor has a second job.
Ray Gilder is the bivocational specialist for the Tennessee Baptist Convention, and he's written a book on the subject. He says more people than you think in the American workplace are also members of the clergy.
Bivocational pastors are policemen, highway patrolmen, they're lawyers, all kind of professions. You name it, we have bivocational pastors.
Gilder also says the idea of a pastor holding down more than one job has very old roots.
See, it's a biblical model. Paul made tents, was a pretty good preacher. Jesus was a carpenter. Amos gathered sycamore fruit. You just name it. There was a lot of folks in the Bible that were greatly used of God who had another job.
In Tennessee, nearly half of the state's 3,000 Baptist churches are headed by a pastor who also has another job. For many ministers, working at more than one place is a choice, but that's not true for everyone.
Here in rural Tennessee, like in other parts of the country, pastors often take another job because they have to. Their churches and congregations are simply too small to support them. Working as a pastor in these communities may fill their souls, but it doesn't necessarily fill their wallets.
Obviously, why I do the job in town or why I do my regular job during the day is because I have to make ends meet and insurance and provide for my family.
You wouldn't be able to put food on your own family's table
if all you did was
being a pastor.
Yes. I'd certainly, it would be hard for me to live right now on what I just make here as the pastor.
Livingston has been a bivocational pastor for more than a decade, years during which he was also a cop on the beat and his community's chief of police. He acknowledges it's not easy juggling family responsibilities and two jobs, especially when one of those jobs comes with a congregation and all of its needs.
The real challenge is me, and sometimes it's still, you know, without God's grace, you wouldn't be able to do it, is the fact of overwhelming responsibility of being the pastor, that when people are in the hospital or when people are sick or when people have one lost a loved one or they get in a car accident. But the thing that's hard for me is sometimes I just can't be there because I work a job during the day. A lot of times I just don't have the days to be able to take off, to be able to go to those certain things. So that's what's real hard, and just not having enough time to minister like you should.
Ray Gilder says such guilt and feeling stretched thin are common feelings among bivocational ministers.
They have to make what time they have useful. They can't waste a lot of time. I tell folks, bivocational pastors can be a lot of things, but they can't be lazy. They've got to be busy. They've got to learn how to get the job done.
But bivocational pastors and their churches can also enjoy advantages. Often members of the congregation will step in to do jobs the pastor just doesn't have the time to do, from church office work to comforting fellow congregants who are sick or dying. Those extra duties, say bivocational pastors, can create more of a sense of shared church ownership. Many congregants also feel that a pastor who punches a time clock someplace else can better relate to them and their working lives, says Ray Gilder.
The advantages is he's got his ear to the ground. He knows what his people are going through. If you're not careful as a pastor...
He knows what the working world is like.
The working world and the stress and the pressures and being out there among bosses that aren't oftentimes kind to you, the difficulties of getting your job done on time. And so he knows more what his people are feeling and going through than the average.
That's what members of Sam Livingston's church say about him.
He has to go out and be part of the world, too, which is what we are called to do also, not just to hide behind the walls of our church.
Looking ahead, Ray Gilder predicts the number of bivocational pastors in the United States will only grow. Shrinking congregations in many churches and continuing uncertain economic times will make it inevitable, he says.
Probably in America in the next 20 years or so, bivocational will be very common and accepted almost in all circles.
Another dimension of bivocationalism that's increasingly in evidence are those who want to become pastors later in life without leaving their first job and the financial security it provides. John Newby owns one of the largest recreational vehicle sales lots in eastern Tennessee and is in training to become the pastor for the church that's a stone's throw away from where he sells his RVs. He plans on keeping both jobs when he becomes a full minister.
I'm wide open at everything I do.
You're full of energy.
And that's
you feel
right.
You could do both of these jobs well.
I have no problem with it. I know in who I believe.
Why not just do one or the other?
Well, I've thought about that. But, you know, it's God comes first. But you still have to work, you know, and take care of obligations and responsibilities. But I really feel like that the calling is what you got to answer first.
Echoing some spouses in the same position, when John's wife Mary first heard about his decision to join the ministry while keeping his business, well, she wasn't thrilled.
I cried. I was completely unprepared, was not in our plans.
Mary has since come to terms with John's decision, but Ray Gilder says too many bivocational pastors don't understand the toll their life can take on spouses.
Like I say, a lot of these bivocational pastors surrendered late in life. Their wives had another lifestyle before she became the pastor's wife. There's a strain on them about wondering, do I measure up? Am I adequate? Am I dishonored to my husband who's a pastor?
Back in Hohenwald, Pastor Sam Livingston's wife, Kim, knows all about the joys and burdens that come with being married to a bivocational pastor. From her husband being gone long hours, to juggling her own work as a pastor's wife, and a job in the home mortgage industry.
Well, if I allow the spirit to be in control, then we work it out. But when my flesh takes over, then there's usually some kind of spouting out, and then apology later.
Sam Livingston says despite the pressures, he'll remain a bivocational pastor for the foreseeable future, with one job providing him a living, the other a sense of higher purpose.
My goal is to serve the Lord. If the Lord chooses to have me here as a bivocational minister until the time I retire, go home to be with him, I'm fine with that.
Thank you for coming. I hope you come back again, okay?
For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Saul Gonzalez in Hohenwald, Tennessee.
As Good Friday approaches, we have a report from Bill Baker on a group of monks for whom a special collection is taken up every Good Friday in every Catholic parish in the country. The monks are part of the Franciscan Monastery of the Holy Land, about 400 monks who help take care of Christianity's holiest sites in and around Israel, 54 of them. The Franciscans have been doing this since the 14th century.
Of all the tourists who go to Israel and its surroundings each year, it's estimated that more than half of them are Christian pilgrims, there to visit the holiest sites of the Christian story. Among them, according to the New Testament, Galilee, where Jesus spent most of his life. The Garden of Gethsemane, where the Gospels say Jesus prayed the night before he was crucified. And the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, above what is venerated as Jesus' tomb. In the 13th century, during the Fifth Crusade, another traveler to the Middle East was a man who became Saint Francis. He went to Egypt to try to make peace between the Christians and the Muslims. Later, in Francis's honor, Pope Clement VI made the order Francis founded, the Franciscans, the official guardians of the holy sites. With others, the Franciscans have been doing that ever since.
And I came here, and I feel God so close to me.
At 54 Holy Land shrines and sanctuaries. Along with their caretaking and other projects, the Holy Land Franciscans also try to promote interfaith understanding.
I have befriended Muslims and Jews, Israelis, you know, even atheists. We have lots of atheists running around here. I said this makes no difference anymore. What's important is that you care for them.
There are now nearly 400 Franciscan friars and nuns in and around Israel. They run a school in Jericho where Muslim students are taught Islam and Christian students learn Christianity. In the old city of Jerusalem, they are renovating and building affordable housing. Back in the U.S. 100 years ago, a Franciscan friar thought too many Americans who wanted to visit the Holy Land could not afford to do so. So he led a successful campaign to build in Washington a monastery and around it exact replicas of the holiest Christian sites in the Middle East, the Tomb of the Holy Sepulchre and the Stone of the Anointing. Bethlehem, the birthplace of Jesus and scenes of the crucifixion.
It reminds people of what is present thousands of miles away and recreates it for them.
We call it an oasis of peace, and it really is.
To support the work of the Franciscans, here and in the Holy Land, a special collection is taken every Good Friday in every Catholic parish in the country. It's required by the Pope. The collection brings in each year about $12 million, increasing a little every year. About 2,000 people visit the replicas each month. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Bill Baker at the Franciscan Monastery of the Holy Land in Washington.
Finally, the music and ministry of the Blind Boys of Alabama, performing gospel music for 70 years. They've won 5 Grammys and the hearts of many audiences, especially the disabled. We begin with one of the original blind boys since 1944. His name is Jimmy Carter.
Sit back, relax, and listen to the blind boy.
The blind boy started out in a little town in Alabama called Talladega. The group started out June the 10th. 1944.
All you need is faith to hear the Jesus humming. You don't need no ticket. You just thank the Lord.
I was born without sight, and I used to question God. I was the baby of 6 boys, and I was the only one that was blind. I was the only one that could sing. And so music means a lot to me.
The Blind Boys is a group that's not blind. They just can't see. And that means they might have lost their sight, but they never lost their direction.
Feel that we were called by God to do this work.
When God shut Noah in the grand old ark, but he put a rainbow in the cloud.
No matter what the situation is, I found a way. God will find a way. Like the Bible says, if you trust in the Lord, he'll make a way. And that's what he done for the blind boys.
There will never be any peace until God is at the conference table.
There will never be any peace until God is seated at the conference table.
We heard the words, and then it was meaning so much because of what was going on today. So we heard it, and we put it down, and it sounds so good, and it felt better than it sounded. So we said we're going to keep it. So now we sing that one every night. And it means so much to all of us.
We've been around a long time. And God has kept us. He has provided for us. And we've had some of our people to pass away, he always sends other people to fill in. So that means that, you know, we are doing something that's pleasing to him.
That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. And visit our website, where there's always much more and where you can also listen to or watch each of our programs. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, more music from the Blind Boys of Alabama.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.